Chapter 16. My dear Wormwood, you mentioned casually in your last letter that the patient has continued to attend one church and one only since he is converted, and that he is not wholly pleased with it. May I ask you what you are about? Why have I no report on the causes of his fidelity to the parish church? Do you realize that unless it is due to indifference, it is a very bad thing? Surely you know that if a man can't be cured of church-going, the next best thing is to send him all over the neighborhood looking for the church that suits him until he becomes a taster or connoisseur of churches. The reasons are obvious. In the first place, the parochial organization should always be attacked, because being a unity of place and not of likings, it brings people of different classes and psychology together in the kind of unity the enemy desires. The congregational principle, on the other hand, makes each church into a kind of club, and finally, if all goes well, into a coterie or faction. In the second place, the search for a suitable church makes the man a critic where the enemy wants him to be a pupil. What he wants of a layman in church is an attitude which may indeed be critical in the sense of rejecting what is false or helpful, but which is wholly uncritical in the sense that it does not appraise, does not waste time in thinking about what it rejects, but lays itself open in uncommenting, humble receptivity to any nourishment that is going. You see how groveling, how unspiritual, how irredeemably vulgar he is? This attitude, especially during sermons, creates the condition most hostile to our whole policy in which platitudes can become really audible to a human soul. There's hardly any sermon or any book which may not be dangerous to us if it is received in this temper. So pray, bestir yourself and send this fool the round of the neighboring churches as soon as possible. Your record up to date has not given us much satisfaction. The two churches nearest him, I've looked up in the office, both have certain claims. At the first of these, the vicar is a man who has been so long engaged in watering down the faith to make it easier for a supposedly incredulous and hard-headed congregation that it is now he who shocks his parishioners with his unbelief, not vice versa. He has undermined many a soul's Christianity. His conduct of the services is also admirable. In order to spare the laity all difficulties, he has deserted both the lectionary and the appointed psalms, and now, without noticing it, revolves endlessly round the little treadmill of his 15 favorite psalms and 20 favorite lessons. We are thus safe from the danger that any truth not already familiar to him and to his flock should ever reach them through Scripture. But perhaps your patient is not quite silly enough for this church, or not yet. At the other church, we have Father Spike. That humans are often puzzled to understand the range of his opinions, why he is one day almost a communist, and the next not far from some kind of theocratic fascism. One day a scholastic, and the next prepared to deny human reason altogether. One day immersed in politics, and the day after declaring that all states of this world are equally under judgment. We, of course, see the connecting link, which is hatred. The man cannot bring himself to preach anything which is not calculated to shock, grieve, puzzle, or humiliate his parents and their friends. A sermon which such people could accept would be to him an insipid as a poem which they could scan. There is also a promising streak of dishonesty in him. We are teaching him to say the teaching of the church is, when he really means, I'm almost sure I read recently in Meriton or someone of that sort. But I must warn you that he has one fatal defect. He really believes, and this may yet mar all. But there is one good point which both these churches have in common. They are both party churches. I think I warned you before that if your patient can't be kept out of the church, he ought at least to be violently attached to some party within it. I don't mean on really doctrinal issues. About those, the more lukewarm he is, the better. And it isn't the doctrines of which we chiefly depend for producing malice. The real fun is working up hatred between those who say Mass and those who say Holy Communion, when neither party could possibly state the difference between, say, Hooker's doctrine and Thomas Aquinas, in any form, in which would hold water for 5 minutes, and all the purely indifferent things, candles and clothes and whatnot, are an admirable ground for our activities. We have quite removed from men's mind what that pestilent fellow Paul used to teach about food and other unessentials, namely, that the human without scruples should always give in to the human with scruples. You would think they could not fail to see the application. You would expect to find the low churchman genuflecting and crossing himself lest the weak conscience of his high brother should be moved to irreverence, and the high one refraining from these exercises lest he should betray his low brother in idolatry. And so it would have been, but for our ceaseless labor. Without that, the variety of usage within the Church of England might have become a positive hotbed of charity and humility. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.